You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Hello, and welcome to Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency, the PUTcast. PUT is a not-for-profit industry watchdog organization dedicated to exposing the truth about the shady, abusive practices of pharmacy benefit managers and how they affect American patients, healthcare providers, and taxpayers. On the PUTcast, we'll talk to pharmacy industry experts, influencers, and patients, always with the goal of bringing the truth, transparency, and solutions to America's prescription drug affordability crisis.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the PUTcast. This is Monique Whitney, the Executive Director for Pharmacists United for Truth and Transparency. We are so excited to be back again in 2021. And with me is PUT President Scott Newman, who's also my co-host.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us, Scott. So at the time that we're recording this, it's been only 2021 is only a few days old, and there's already a lot happening, which is what I think is going to make this particular episode even more interesting, because as we're recording this, we are in, I don't know, week whatever of the vaccine rollout, and there's been a lot of political drama. But we have an opportunity to talk about something also very dramatic, and that is this acquisition of Medicure, this Canadian drug manufacturer, who acquired Marley Drug.
Yeah, so that's an interesting, idea that these guys have put together. And I think we should just note that Marley Drug is in North Carolina. And this is a Canadian company that is trying to, break into providing a drug that, is difficult to even get on formulary without all kinds of hoops and restrictions. So it'll be interesting to hear their take on this.
Yeah. The hardest thing up to this point, and I think you would agree with me on this, has been just trying to understand from a manufacturer's point of view what it's like to try to work with a PBM, because we know from the pharmacy side, I know from the patient side, but we have this incredible opportunity to get a behind the scenes look at what happens with a drug that would have been a $700 drug for a patient, but is now a $90 drug or a $1 a day drug. So with that, let me introduce our two panelists, the stars of our show this evening. First is Neil Owens, who is the president of Medicure. Neil, welcome.
Thanks for the invitation, and glad to be here.
We're so, so glad to have you. And then of course, Dave Marley, the founder of Marley Drug. Dave?
Good evening, glad to be here.
And on a side note, we're also really glad to have Dave on, because this is PUT's 10th year, and Dave is our esteemed founder. So congratulations on 10 years. Did you have any idea it would go this long?
No, I really didn't. But part of the reason I'm thrilled to be here tonight is seeing where you guys have taken this idea we had back in 2011, and, excited to see what you're doing with it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting to have just a quick take from Dave on what he thinks of the organization, what it looks like now versus when they were gearing it up. That I'd love to hear just a moment of his thoughts on that.
All right, Dave.
Sure.
Take it away.
Back in 2011, there was a lot going on. In the PBM world, they were having more and more negative influences on retail pharmacy than we've seen through the years, and everybody was all hot and excited about lawsuits and legal action and lobbying and spending money to do this and do that, and somewhere along the line was the realization that the PBMs were always going to out lobby us. They got more money than God. They got 2-to-1 lobbyists on the Hill. They were always going to out legislate us. We could pass a bill, and then they'd find a way to pass another bill to get around it. So me and a couple others were talking one day, and we just said, what about the court of public opinion? If we could make the consumers, and more importantly, the purchasers of the product, the HR directors of these large self-insured companies, if we could expose the game through public relations, maybe we could actually have an impact, because we were getting nowhere legislatively and we were getting nowhere politically or with legal lawsuits. And so, you know, that was the premise behind it. And so we put out a call to money, and we raised, I don't know, $250,000 over a period of a month. And we out and hired the first PR firm. And the thing that I'll leave you with was, you know, when we realized we had something, it was during the Lipitor rebate scandal way back in 2011, when Lipitor went generic and the PBMs sent out to everybody, no, you're going to still have to dispense the brand. That was, you know, what we're talking about now, 9 years later, the game is still going on. And it's going on far more than it was even back then. The dollar figures we're talking about, and then we're going to talk about tonight, what the PBMs are grabbing, these rebate dollars and inflating the cost of the drug, you know, it's still going on. And so, yes, PUT is still very much needed. You guys have taken it to a level far beyond what I could have imagined. So I'm looking forward to further exposing the game tonight.
Yeah, I've told the Lipitor story on a not our podcast, I don't believe, but maybe on like the Business of Pharmacy podcast at one point, that I was hoping I got right, because I had heard it through several, you know, people's mouths before it got to me. So glad you reaffirmed that for me.
Yep.
Yeah, this is, it's really exciting night. So this is actually a perfect opportunity to turn this over to you, Neil. So you have this company, so Medicure, and I think what would be helpful for the people who are listening is to hear a little bit about, you know, Medicure and what you all do and what you specialize in and how you even came to know Marley Drug and Dave Marley.
Yeah, so we are a smaller company. We're based in Winnipeg, Canada. We're about 30 employees. And we had actually always focused on hospital products. So we went to the U.S. to market products in the cardiovascular space. And it was only relatively recently that we acquired a product for the statin market and decided to basically go down the typical route of marketing to consumers. So we did the standard approach of going to PBMs to get insurance coverage. And as a side note, as a Canadian, I didn't know what a PBM was until I actually dealt with the U.S. system. But that was the standard that was expected. And we quickly found, my expectation was that as a cardiovascular product, it would be used to lower cholesterol, and the PBMs would basically evaluate the product based on its clinical merit. And what we found was that the only thing that they were interested in was what was the rebate that we could offer them. And to me, it was a strange approach. It was a strange system. But we decided to forge ahead and see what we can get. And basically, we went nowhere with the PBMs. And part of that might be just because we're a smaller company. But really, when we hit a wall, it was in terms of the patient experience. And generally speaking, how I tell the story is that when we heard from patients and physicians basically the misery of getting the drug prescribed and approved, we knew we had a problem. And basically, we've since discovered that we think that there's a more systemic problem in terms of the whole process. And one of the benefits of being a smaller company is we could actually be innovative and try new things. And one of them was to completely bypass the PBMs. And lo and behold, we found a pharmacy that was for sale. And our idea was to bypass the PBMs and go directly to patients and say, look, we can actually give you a much better price by bypassing your insurance plan. And we're happy, you're happy, and the physician is happy. And I still remember the first conversation we had with Dave, where he was basically of the same mind. And he's always tried to advocate for better pricing for patients and consumers. And there was really a meeting of minds where we kind of saw the light and thought, this is a new approach. It's different. But in the end, it's better for us as a manufacturer, and it's better for physicians and consumers. And we're excited to kind of embark on this new and different path.
We're excited, too. I can tell you that, you know, this shouldn't be a novel concept, and this shouldn't be the first conversation that we've had about this, but congratulations. It's amazing that you're taking the step. We all know that this is the right way to do it. I hope that the infiltration that you guys are able to accomplish with it, you know, proves the theory to fact, because nobody's been in the situation to make it happen until you guys came along.
Yeah, if I can tell a little bit of a story to kind of put this in context, is we heard from a patient who basically said, look, I'm taking a statin, which is the medication that we're marketing, and it's giving me terrible muscle pain. And I went to my doctor and I said, I need a different type of statin. And the physician said, okay, but in order to get the newer statin covered, you're going to have to fail on 5 different statins before the insurance company will actually let you take this new statin, which is in the drug class that we're marketing. And so they did. And that patient failed on 5 different statins. And then when they went to actually get it filled, it was still extremely expensive. And so they said, okay, so this is not going to work. But it so happened that they could try our product, and it works for that patient, and it's accessible in terms of price. So there was that level of frustration from patients. And then from doctors, they were telling us, look, this is a huge headache for us to process insurance claims. I never know if I write prescription, if it's actually going to get covered. And the patient usually goes to the pharmacy. It's not there, it's not in stock. And the patient comes back frustrated. And the doctor actually doesn't know why it was rejected by the insurance company in terms of prior authorization. But they have all of this overhead in terms of staff in order to process the insurance claims. So when we spoken to physicians about this concept, they immediately loved the idea, and they said, this is a game changer for us, because we know that when we find a right medication for a patient, we know it's going to get filled, and we know that patient is not going to come back with a sticker shock of what the price is, and that it's actually going to get filled. So those are kind of the two perspectives that we used in order to think about a different model.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack in just that one story. You know, you've already touched on rebates, step therapy or fail first therapy for a drug that was then in the end super expensive, but didn't necessarily have to be that expensive. There's a lot to say about that. And I definitely want to talk about that. But one thing I'd like to do is I'd like to ask Dave. Dave, you wouldn't, you know, just sell your pharmacy to anybody. So I'm curious about what prompted you to have this kind of relationship with a manufacturer. Why sell your pharmacy to Medicure? Why do this?
You know, this is going to be a really fun story to tell. I don't think I've even told this to Neil, so this may be the first time he hears this. You know, the day that I spoke to them on the phone, I had spoken to what I'll call 3 other suitors. You know, as part of the process of putting a business for sale, we hired a broker that was, you know, shopping us around. And I had talked to 2 other people and had to explain who we are and what we do and why we do it, why I thought we were so great. And so, honestly, I was tired. I was like, all right, last call of the day. Let me just get through this one. And, you know, I get them on the phone, and they're talking about this brand name drug. And I'm like, oh, shit, here we go. You know, they want us because we've got our 50 licenses, but they expect us to be able to process claims through insurance because they're a brand, and they're talking about a brand statin. And it wasn't until Dr. Friesen spoke up, the CEO of the company, and said, no, we don't like PBMs either. And I was like, all right, wake up. Get back in the game here. I need to see what these guys are talking about. And so when they explained, yeah, that's a brand name drug, but it's only $90 for 90 pills. And then I was like, wait a minute. Back up a second. You're a brand name drug. You're selling a brand name statin at a generic price. Well, yeah. And then they went on to explain what their goal was. They said, we don't like PBMs either. And we understand you don't like them. And so we just want to use your infrastructure to sell this drug. And at that point, you know, I went through the rest of the call and was trying not to, you know, jump out of my chair and go, please, 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 let this work. You know, I was trying to feign some of my enthusiasm because I probably would have sold it for a fraction of the price. But it just sounded, after everything that I've done in this arena for the last, I've had my store 17 years, and I think I started fighting with the PBMs day one. This just sounded like the perfect, could this possibly be true? Could this really be the way out, you know, when I say out, of selling the store, but in a way that completely complements everything that our store has been about for the last 17 years, you know, with our discount generic program and our ability to get medications in the hands of people without touching the PBM. I mean, that's been our goal since, gosh, I think it was 2011, has always been about how can I get the PBMs out of my business model? And so here to have someone who is interested in not only in what we do and how we do it, but understands it and wants to bring a product to the market through our system. And then from a business side, to be the only one that can do it, well, that's just a no-brainer. And so, you know, there's lots of just incredible synergies and even the personalities. From day one, we, you know, they all just seemed like family, you know, although I think I do swear a little bit more than they do, but I'm from New York and they're from Canada. But, you know, we're all a bunch of hockey players and hockey fans, and can we get along great?
That's awesome.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. I tell you what, if there's any type of Canadian drug importation that I would support, this would be it.
Well, you know, and that's important to discuss. Now, I'll let Neil cover that more, but it's important to, since you mentioned it in that frame, we got to make sure that we're clear on this. This is not a Canadian importation product, you know, or
right.
device. You know, these guys, their company's based in Canada, but this is just, you know, another manufacturer actually with a U.S. subsidiary that's, you know, where we're
Absolutely.
Buying the drug from. And it's not about Canadian importation at all.
So just kind of going back to a second, it's unusual anymore to hear about an organization, you know, like a Medicare, right? Like Medicare, who genuinely believes in this product. They believe in their product and they want to sell it because at a lower price, and I don't mean just like a little lower price, a substantially lower price, because they genuinely care about the patient. They have actual values. I mean, Dave, you are pretty well known in our industry, in the independent pharmacy world, for being someone with strong values, you know, who's outspoken and, you know, isn't afraid to say the thing that needs to be said. And so it's really interesting that you and Medicare, that you all found each other, because you're right. It's like you are like this family.
Yeah, you know, it's when I tell people, you know, friends of mine here, well, you sold the business. What are you going to do? I'm like, well, honestly, I'm going to keep doing what I do because this is going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, so Dave, taking into account the recent Supreme Court case, Rutledge versus PCMA, and the favorable ruling, how do you see that factoring into your decision to run with this business model?
The reason that SCOTUS ruled against the PBMs and what we're doing go hand in hand. You know, the PBMs have hidden behind ERISA for so long to try and say you can't regulate us, you know, or the states can't regulate us because we're covered by ERISA, but ERISA has no regulations. And because there's no regulations, they've been, you know, gouging everybody and everything that they can get their fingers into. And so what we're doing with Medicare and Marley, you know, by cutting the PBMs out only happens because there was no regulation. You know, if there was appropriate regulation, this wouldn't even have been needed. You know, if states had adequate control over the PBMs, this wouldn't have been needed. You know, this happened, this merger happened because it was the only way that this manufacturer could get their you know, cost-effective, clinically superior, side-effect-averse drug on the market because there's no damn regulation. So, you know, SCOTUS definitely made the right
call.
Hopefully the states will follow suit, get the appropriate regulations and licensing in place to curtail some of this nonsense. So, you know, again, just a little tie-in between what we're doing and the ruling of the Supreme Court recently.
So let's now actually go back and explore a little bit of some of the things that, Neil, you were talking about. And, you know, without putting you too much on the spot, because, you know, there's a certain reality to the conversation we're having. There's a certain, you know, kind of legal reality. I think it would really be great if you could tell us how a drug that should have been a $700 drug can be sold at the price you're selling it for and still be profitable. You know, still keep, you're a publicly traded company in Canada, still keep your shareholders happy. How are you able to do that? Tell us about this.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So the way that the system works and basically the way that I was kind of learned about the process myself was that the whole system is set up that there's a very high, what's called the wholesaler acquisition cost or kind of a wholesale price. And that's what most people will see. That's generally speaking the price that you would pay if you don't have any insurance or if there's no rebate from the insurance company. And what the PBM does is they negotiate a rebate such that they can show that rebate to their members, to the insurance companies. However, they do mark up that price themselves as part of the process. And what the manufacturer ends up with is a fraction of that wholesale price. And it just doesn't, again, it just doesn't really make sense to us as to what is the benefit for the actual patient, because in the end, there's this huge transfer of funds, which impacts their deductible and impacts the ability for those with government insurance to actually get access to the drug. But so in the end, it doesn't actually make a huge difference for us if we sell it, at $90 for 90 days. That's still a very good margin for us as a company. And that ends up being, you know, a very clear price for consumers. So I think you have to think about, you know, why is the system set up that way? Who's actually benefiting? If it doesn't really benefit the manufacturers in the end to actually have that high wholesale price.
If that doesn't make somebody steaming mad, then I don't know what would. And the idea that they sit in front of subcommittees and say things like, well, we don't set the prices, the drug manufacturers do, when we all who are learned into this crazy system know that's a technicality. They literally tell you what it's going to cost to list the drug in order to, you know, create that money transfer, because it's easier to hide it when you do it that way.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I think the criminal term is called money laundering.
Right. It almost is if like nothing like, you know, the word kickback doesn't exist in this industry for some reason, you know. But they are in fact setting the list prices.
One of the turning points for us as a company was when we were not getting any coverage. We weren't getting anywhere with the PBMs, no matter what rebate we gave. And there's different tiers of coverage, which. In the end, have a result in a really high copay for the patient. So we just kept increasing the rebate because we wanted to get it covered. We thought it was of benefit to the right patient. But at some point, we said, you know, why aren't you giving us any coverage, no matter what rebate we give you? And they said, basically, you're actually on par with generic statins, you know, which are some of the most accessibly priced medications out there. But if we give the, if we give you that coverage, it's going to hurt our quality metrics. And at that point, I said, you know what, we're not going to get anywhere with this. And so let's just, we have to find a different way of doing business because this is crazy.
Absolutely crazy.
It's fascinating that they would mention the quality metrics. Did they define the quality metrics, just out of curiosity?
So they didn't actually define it. They, I think that was their catch-all term to make us go away.
Yeah, that's our working theory too, because it always seems to come down to that. We were presenting some model language at the American Legislative Exchange Council last month. And one of the things that we were talking about in our proposal was to eliminate the excess certification fees that PBMs require of pharmacies just to be able to participate. You know, it's such a company store kind of structure anyway. And the argument we got back, and it was so vehement and so passionate from the opposition, was, you're ruining our quality metrics. Like, what are you talking about? I could buy it, you know, I give a check for $500 and that'll buy your quality metrics right there. What are your quality metrics? Define your quality metrics. There was no definition at all. So I was curious if they defined it for you, but agree. Seems to be a good catch-all phrase for them.
Yeah, no, even for the manufacturer, they didn't actually define it. And just the other part of the story for me is the, you know, the price game, but also just, you know, what, again, just bringing it back to, what does this actually mean for people who actually need the product? Because in the end, these are people who just want to lower their cholesterol. So, you know, these are real people who are struggling, and they want to be able to use their insurance, obviously, because they're paying for it. But to be stuck in this position where, okay, they can't get access, but then when they do, it's still extremely expensive because of their copay. That to us was also just another reason to cut out the PBMs altogether and just go through the cash route.
So if I remember correctly, the brand version, its price is up over $1,000 now.
Yeah, the main competitor that we have, I would say that they've taken the classic route of they're priced at over $1,100 for a 90-day supply, and they've done a price increase twice a year for the past 10 years. That's the standard approach, because I think that in our mind, that keeps the PBMs happy, because then they're continuing to see a return from that high wholesaler price. And so that's kind of the situation that we face, which we can actually offer what's called a pharmaceutical alternative, same active drug, but it's a different salt. That we can actually offer for 90 days, $90 for 90 days. So it's a huge price disparity for basically the same active component.
Can we talk about that mechanism for a second? And I'm very glad that you guys are, you know, what I would consider in, you know, the drug manufacturer world, a moral corporation. You know, changing the salt form is kind of or even changing, you know, a methyl group on a drug that the brand drugs do to make a product that's basically the same as something that already exists from a functional standpoint. But then they typically jack the price up on that, or they claim another 14-year, you know, exclusivity with an NDA. Well, first of all, the idea that the competitor's product, they didn't patent any of the salt forms of it, is kind of stupid to me. But, you know, when something like this happens, usually what we see in the industry is, you know, a like product that is significantly more on a list price side to milk the system. And the fact that you guys did this and did the opposite with it, like, that really makes me happy.
Yeah, Scott, what you're describing in the technical terms is called product life cycle extension, or PLE. And yeah, that's what they all do. You know, as I'm sitting here listening to Neil talk, I'm reminded, I'm going to age myself here real quick. reminded of the movie Mr. Mom. And you remember the guy, they were doing the commercial on the tuna can, Schooner Tuna. And the CEO was there holding a can of tuna, and it was a Schooner Tuna, the tuna with a heart. You know, what you have here is Medicure, you know, the pharma with a heart. You know, you don't see this with big pharma, you know, and I'll put some of the blame on them, but obviously it's the PBMs that are driving it. But you truly have a manufacturer with a heart, you know, that really gives a shit about basically upending every angle of the distribution channel. And like you just said, you took a PLE, product lifecycle extension mechanism, but did it the other way around. You took a salt of pitavastatin, rebranded it as Zypitamag, and cut the price down to 90%. You know, you just don't see that. You know, pharmaceutical manufacturers don't do that. And to be able to do that and then cut the PBMs out of the equation and then go so far as to spend a significant amount of money to give it a try. I mean, there's so many parts of the story that are huge on many levels.
Yeah, I think that hasn't been talked or hasn't been to this point talked about enough, because I think that it's something that is enormously huge, different way of what our normal is in this industry.
Well, and I'll give you one more, you know, hypothetical. Think about it 10 years down the road. And this is the story that I talk to the Medicare folks about often is, okay, let's say this works, which I believe it will. You know, think about it in the short term and the long term for an independent store owner. You know, the short-term independent guy might hear this and go, but yeah, it's a restricted model. I don't get to do it. You know, why can't we do it? In the short term, yes, you don't have access to this drug, and it's only going to be done this way. But think about it downstream. So let's say this works, and then maybe the manufacturer of Xarelto says, you know what, I don't like charging $500 for 30 tablets. You know, maybe they would do this with us, and we could put Xarelto out there. Again, independent pharmacists might say in the short term, but I don't get to dispense it. You know, why are you cutting me out of the loop? But if we do it enough, and we do it with enough brand name drugs that we've taken away the power of the PBM, so you tell the independents, in the short term, you're going to lose a lot of your brands. Well, how many guys really give a shit about dispensing brands?
Right? Yeah, have them all, please.
Yeah, take them all away, because we're getting screwed on them anyway. And so we take the brands away from the independents, and we destroy the PBM industry in the process. And then we bring everything back to what it used to be. You know, back. And
I honestly had that thought leading up to this call when I'm driving down the road making a couple of local deliveries. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if this takes off, I mean, it really could change things, you know, real change for how our model works here, because it doesn't work, but it keeps getting pushed and forced to work. It's not sustainable, though. This model, it can't sustain the way in the direction that it's going, because it's driven by the greed of, you know, a middleman that produces, manufactures nothing, distributes nothing, has no inventory to stock, and still claims on their taxes that they own the drug products that we're selling, but none of the expenses involved. And, you know, to continue to squeeze both sides of that middle person, you know, between the drug manufacturers and the practitioners, us, you know, little guys, you know, it's not sustainable at all. The only way it's sustainable is if they continue to funnel it into their own businesses, where they can hide more money. And, you know, otherwise it all comes crashing down.
Yep. But think about it, and I'll shut up after this last comment. Think about it. You go all the way back to probably when I was in high school. You know, you're talking about the 80s, before managed care and Kaiser Permanente and Nixon and all that shit got together. You know, you're going back to basically the shoebox model, meaning, you know, true indemnified pharmacy care, where, you know, if we're left with dirt cheap generics and now dirt cheap brands, who needs a PBM? You know, most consumers, I think, would be glad to be able to walk in and out of a pharmacy, you know, at a dollar for pill on just about anything. You know, get rid of the PBMs You know, you open up, your employers have gone to near worthless insurance anyway. You know, you give everybody an HSA with a fixed dollar amount, and you get the prices of the generics and the brands down to, you know, $30 to $50 a month, if that. And you've totally destroyed the need for the PBMs.
No, that everything that you just said, Dave. I mean, it's just you're spot on. You're absolutely spot on. So a question that I think you and Neil have encountered in the past has been the, you know, can other manufacturers do this? Is what you're doing a sustainable model, and how would that work? I'm curious what your views are as far as the future of being able to offer something like what you're doing.
So from my view, two things. One is, this is a bit of a proof of concept. And that was actually one of the questions I had for Dave pretty early on, is why has no one else done this? And so, you know, it takes a while for people to wrap their head around this concept. But I think that, you know, if we can prove that this does work, I think that it's going to be something that's rolled out more widely. I honestly don't know how exactly, but I feel like that's the way it's going to progress, because I think just for all the reasons we spoke about. The second point is, my hope and goal is to actually have other products that, you know, are branded, sold in the same way. So just repeat this with other products where, you know, for whatever reason, you know, we've actually been approached by other companies who've said, we really think this is interesting, and can we work with you in order to sell our branded product? And that's, you know, I think that as we progress, we're going to get, you know, more attention as to, you know, this is an innovative way of doing things, and hey, here are other products that are clinically beneficial that we can get for a much cheaper price where we're not actually going through the PBMs.
And Dave, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, exactly. I mean, pretty much what I just said. You know, when you remove the entire rebate scam, you know, what you see and what Medicare is showing is that, you know, okay, so the Pitavastatin, all the studies were done, you know, all the R&D, all the drug development. Admittedly, Medicare didn't have to eat that because it was already done by the innovator with the Pitavastatin. Calcium would live alone. So obviously there are some costs that they were able to avoid, you know, by going with the salt of the drug. That being said, you know, there's one drug that comes to mind that, you know, I do want to put these guys together, because a cousin of mine was one of the medical directors of getting it through the studies in Europe. And he and I were talking when we were discussing Medicare purchasing us, and he was relaying the frustration that they've had, same issues with trying to get it through the PBM process and trying to get it at a copay that works, because they can show, again, in the cardiovascular space, that drug really has significant impact for people with heart attacks, but they can't get it in the hands of people because of the PBMs. And so, you know, especially as newer drugs are coming to market, you know, that, you know, are treating newer conditions or different conditions, you know, that may be naive to the process, that haven't been involved for so long, that are so jaded to think, well, this is just how you got to do it. You know, if they're young, like Medicare, and they haven't been, you know, led to believe that there's no other way, then as these newer products come to market and as we bring attention to this model, again, I can't find a logical reason that PBMs exist anymore. I mean, they don't need to be there. And so this is one way to get rid of them.
Yeah, the evidence is certainly mounting for that anything beyond basic claims processing is almost a non-starter anymore. And with the evidence that's mounting on rebates, and it's been mounting now for the better part of 4 years, and then with this, what we're talking about here in this conversation, you start to ask yourself a question, which is who all needs to know this information? So Putt, I know we didn't start out this way, and Dave, you and I have talked about that, about the original audiences for Putt's work, but we've over the last few years, we've been invited into conversations with state lawmakers, and we actually submitted executive order language on PBMs and eliminating PBM practices like rebates. But at the end of the day, we're still here. We're still talking about this. This is still happening. And so you start to ask yourself, well, if it's not the legislators who need to know and understand this, who needs to know and understand this? And the logical conclusion is right where we started, which is the employers.
You know, I said, talking to Ivan the other day, that, you know, when PBMs originated, okay, it was unique and it was paper driven and it wasn't computer based and it was, you know, it was simply a way to get away from the shoebox. You know, in the old days, your mom and dad saved the receipts, threw them in a shoebox, and once a year they took them into HR to get reimbursed. And, you know, managed care came along and said, we'll help you do away with the shoebox. We'll do all that for you. You know, and then it became computerized. You know, which even then made it simpler. We're at the stage where basically claims transmission is a switch. You know, it's a simple computer program, click, click, and it's done. You know, why do we have all this fluff and Jeff crap in the middle where all you really need is a switch and someone to process it and to provide
and the certainly report? Yeah, so certainly that just goes to show that we certainly don't need a middleman that thinks that their value to the drug supply chain is worth 40% of the list price.
It's a hell of a lot more than 40%, buddy. You're talking 90%.
I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Fuck them.
Yes, right, going with what they say that they provide with their fancy language and branding. We've been amused by some of that, but we'll talk about that on another podcast in the future. And when we do, we'll all be sure to bring our glossary of PBM terms with us. So now, you know, here you guys are. So we've got a distribution channel now for this really great product. Neil, I'd love to know, you know, what will you be doing now? How do you reach out to patients to let them know that this drug is available, that they don't have to go through five rounds of fail first therapy to get it? Just what happens here moving forward?
So typically we've worked with physicians to tell them about, you know, the ways that they and their patients can access the product. That's always been the way that we've operated, you know, coming from the hospital setting. And Dave has actually been an excellent partner to help us learn and speak to consumers directly. Again, there's always kind of been that barrier where Dave's actually helping us to know this is actually how you should be communicating to customers. And it's going to take a little bit of learning, I think, from consumers to think, okay, this is a branded product, but it's $1 a day. What's the catch, right? So I think there's going to be a certain amount of education and messaging that has to go into this is, you know, a U.S. FDA product. You know, it's from a manufacturer that has U.S. operations. It's just about not, you know, keeping your insurance coverage for when you need it and not necessarily, you know, having to use your coverage to actually access the product. So I think it's a two-handed approach for us in terms of, you know, communicating to physicians. And again, the response has been really positive so far. So they just love the idea of fewer headaches in terms of dealing with the insurance companies. And then talking to patients as well. And again, the response there has been really positive too, where they say, okay, this is great, a great price. I know I'm going to get it and it's shipped to my home.
And that's an interesting point that you bring up about patients that wonder what the catch is. I think it speaks to the degree to which we have become so indoctrinated in this country to healthcare costs being so high for reasons nobody really understands because it's so complex. So I think it would be great to have both of you come back to a future podcast and share some of the lessons that you've learned taking this brand new approach. I think that we're going to see a lot of interest about what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Yeah, that would be great. And hopefully, you know, this is something that really catches on. And we can talk about other products that have been added in terms of success stories. And I'm interested to see, you know, what is the response from the PBMs, if we get any? You know, what are they going to tell us? I wouldn't be surprised if we had a few reach outs and maybe a few surprises.
Love to hear about that, too, if that happens.
Yeah, very much. We've all come to wonder what PBM surprises wait for us around the corner. So to hear that from, you know, someone on the manufacturing side, it sort of confirms what we all think in the back of our minds. So,
well, I was just going to say, just along those lines, I do think it's worth mentioning because I think it'll bring more attention and also get some of the employers' awareness as well. You know, we did spend some time today actually talking to a transparent PBM. You know, we know they're out there. You guys might know some of them, be familiar with them yourselves. You know, by working with a transparent PBM, you know, is another way that we can, you know, we don't want to totally forego the employer on what we're doing. You know, what we're doing saves the self-insured employer money right now, whether he knows it or not. You know, if we connect, you know, with a patient who happens to be working for Duke Power and we change him from Livelo over to Zypitamag, and we save that employer $1,000, you know, he needs to know that his PBM that's fucking him is not the one that saved him the money. You know, what saved him the money was this pharmaceutical manufacturer and this pharmacy just saved him $1,000, and it didn't cost him anything for that to happen. And so by working with a transparent PBM, we also get another angle into the employers where we can go in and say, look, you know, not only – you know, do you have a transparent PBM saving you money, but they're also bringing in a manufacturer who's willing to go outside the PBM model. And so there's another angle there to get to the employers and make sure they're aware that we're saving them money, whether they know it or not.
I think that's really important to make sure that that story is told along with this story, because otherwise it'll get buried in the idea that, oh, well, this is just a novelty, you know, an exception that, you know, this particular manufacturer decided to, you know, to gain access, and they'll try to minimize it to the point where, you know, it's not related back to the idea that every single drug manufacturer could do this.
Right. I mean, that's really the story to the employer. Every manufacturer could do this. You know, and completely wipe out the PBMs from the retail space.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, as we hear from other companies, I'm curious to know what their stories are, because I think that we're not alone in terms of this experience. Having said that, there's a lot of money at play here, and that raises the stakes for everyone.
So. Yep.
that never decreases the amount of problems. It only increases the number of problems.
And I think that's a good point, because right now the PBM lobby has done an excellent job of pointing the finger at the manufacturers and making it seem like they are these horrifically greedy entities, when in fact, what's really been happening is the opposite all along. There is a lot of money at stake. And if you are in a system, which the US is, where your product can pretty much only be sold and distributed by way of a PBM, then the kind of money that ends up getting, you know, passed back and forth starts to look not even good, but just basically reasonable, especially if you don't know that there's another way available to you. So I think there will be a lot more to talk about this in coming episodes of this podcast. And certainly, you know, Neil and Dave, we'd love to have you back. And you know, for anyone else who's listening out there, any other manufacturers who, you know, want to be talking about their own experiences, please let us know, because we would absolutely love to share your story. I think this is the kind of thing that PUT was organized for. And these are the stories that not only do we want to tell, but they have to be told. These stories have to be told so that people can begin to understand what's really happening behind the scenes and why their drug prices and their healthcare premiums are so high.
Yeah, no, thanks, Monique and Scott, for the opportunity, and happy to answer any questions if anyone wants to reach out to you.
Great, thank you. So we're gonna, so this is the part where we're gonna close. And what I would love to ask, actually all of you, even Scott, who is kind of panelist and co-host with me, is as you look to 2021, so we finished 2020, yay, it's in the rearview mirror. What are your hopes for 2021? By the time we, you know, get to the end of 2021, what do you hope will have happened either, you know, in the industry or in the world? Just anything you'd like to say since we're starting with a fresh slate. Neil, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I was just happy to get through 2020, but looking ahead to the end of this year. You know, what I would hope to happen by the end of this year is that, you know, more people ask questions of the way that the current system exists. And I think that would be pretty exciting for there to be a shift in mindset. I don't think that there's going to be drug companies are going to be seen in a positive light by the end of this year. But I think that there could be a shift in terms of, you know, is this the right way to do business? And who's really, you know, following the money? Who's really benefiting from this system? And I think that's kind of the first step is for people to know that there's a different possibility and to really ask some good questions. And, you know, that really spans the spectrum of, you know, independent pharmacies, you know, healthcare providers, patients, and legislators. So, you know, them thinking about, you know, let's see past the smoke and the mirrors and see, you know, what the real possibilities are and, you know, maybe find a different way of doing things. That would be my hope.
That's well said. And Dave, what about you?
You know, first and foremost, you know, we've got to get this virus under control. You know, I think, thank goodness, you know, within 2 weeks, we're going to get some real leadership that understands public health and understands what we need to do to try to get our lives back in the United States. You know, I think it's going to take a full year. I don't think we're going to be anywhere near back to normal until 2022, but I think now we have a chance. You know, if we can get the vaccine distribution kinks worked out and get that going, get the DPA involved in vaccine manufacturing and, you know, nationalize the distribution channels, I think we can get that fixed. In terms of what I would like to hear, I mean, much the same what Neil just said, you know, and it's been my wish since we started PUT in 2011. You know, I want the employers to realize, you know, that their self-funded bank accounts are being raided by the PBMs. You know, the following year, we're going to still have a lot of people unemployed. You know, a lot of the claims transmissions that they live on to fatten the PBM bank accounts. You know, I was naive enough to believe back in the crash of 2008, 9, and 10 that when we had mass unemployment, that would hurt the PBMs, you know, because again, they live on these claims. The claims don't get transmitted. If there's fewer people employed, then they're making less money, you know, and the same thing's going to happen right now. We've got 10 million people unemployed. They're going to start looking for ways to make up the money they lost. They're not just going to lose the money. They're going to be looking for ways to make it up. And it's going to come at the expense of the self-insured employers. And so what we're talking about here couldn't come at a better time, because while we may have found a solution to one of the buckets of money, it's the biggest Ponzi scheme on the planet, what these PBMs do. And so while we might solve this problem with this drug, and we may even solve it with all the brand drugs, they're not going to go away quietly. And so they're going to be raping the employers some other way. We're going to have to figure out what that is, because it's going to happen.
No, that's great. Scott, what about you? What are your hopes for 2021?
I think that my big picture hope, just from our side of things and what we do, I would like to see this concept successful. I mean, I know that being an independent owner, that I'm really standing outside of the window looking in. But, you know, anything, I think that, you know, the responsibility that Neil and his team, Dave included, have with this, you know, this new you know, cliched, great power have great responsibility to make sure that the story is told. And I hope the story gets told accurately. And I hope that, that they own making sure that, the story is told as much as they do having to answer to their shareholders while doing it, because I think that that will long-term, as they've mentioned, you know, help to, knock a few more dominoes down until the whole thing falls. But, you know, I would like in 2021 for the Department of Justice to actually hold, you know, hold the standard that they haven't held in 30 years and stop allowing these monopolies. I would love to see them get broken up. You know, we haven't had a real good breakup of a corporation or anything like this in a long time. And for some reason, we're going after social media, but the PBMs are still, you know, Fortune 10 companies, the top three. I think that they need to be broken up, and I hope that there's more talk about that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think my hope for 2021 is it has threads in everything each of you have said, that I hope that there are, I hope people do start to ask the right questions. And I sort of hope for a collective eye opening, because it's frustrating to me that, you know, a group of organizations could point the finger at, for example, manufacturers and say they're greedy and they're, you know, responsible for the mess we're in, when the people pointing the fingers are sitting in the, you know, the top 10 of the Fortune 500, and the people they're pointing the fingers at haven't even made the top 50. You know, it's just, I'd love to see people open their eyes.
Oh, they even point the fingers at the independent owners and call us greedy, you know,
which is desperate, just completely desperate. But that's a conversation for a future podcast. So I think with that, we'll close up this evening. Neil Owens, Dave Marley, Scott Newman, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And for everyone listening, thank you for joining us as well. We always appreciate your comments. Please leave us one in the comment box. And until next time, have a wonderful January, and we'll see you next month.